Welcome to the Steady Hand Podcast. I'm Scott Ronalds, joined as usual with Tom Bradley. In today's session, we're going to discuss the second quarter of 2012. Tom, I'll pass it over to you.
Well, Scott, we opened the quarterly report with a quote from Rob Arnott, who's a pretty eminent thinker out of the U.S. He was the founder of fundamental indexing, and I think his description of our current predicament was quite telling. He said, "We're living through a 3D hurricane, debt, deficits, and demographics." And, you know, we don't talk a lot about economics and Europe in the report, and we're not going to today on this podcast, but I want our clients and our listeners to know that our managers, and certainly myself, are assuming that we're in for a challenging economic environment ahead, 3D, if you will. And, you know, with it's going to come horrible news, occasional market shocks or jolts, which we certainly hope to take advantage of, and slower profit growth over the next few years. But I want to remind our clients what's going on out there is well factored into the stock prices. Not to say that markets can't go down further, because they can, but there isn't too many investors that don't know about what's going on in Europe and in Washington, etc. So as you listen to this podcast today and read our quarterly report, you'll pick up that we're pretty optimistic on stocks, and that all of this of what we're focusing on is creating some great opportunities for our managers and ultimately for our clients. Now, in the second quarter, markets certainly behaved in line with those 3D concerns. A very weak for stocks. Particular sectors were down a meaningful amount: resources, European and U.S. financials, the tech sector in general, and Japanese exporters. And we saw in Canada our market was down about 6%. And the major U.S. and European markets dropped anywhere between 3 and 8. Japan, of note, was down 10%. Now, the opposite of that running from risk, if you will, with the markets being down, was a surge to safety again this quarter, and bonds had a strong showing. The Canadian bond market was up a little over 2%. You know, and that was driven, obviously, by yields falling. One of the benchmark bonds we watch is the 10-year Government of Canada bond, and its yield dropped from 2.1% at the beginning of the quarter to 1.7% as of June 30th, and actually touched a low of 1.65% early in June, which is certainly a very low level. Government bonds, as a result, were the best performers, but corporates and high-yield bonds, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, also advanced nicely. Scotty, do you want to dig into a little more detail and start with the income fund?
The fund gained 1.2% in the quarter, and it's up 3.6% on the year. Tom, as you mentioned, the government bond holdings have been the strongest performers so far this year, although the fund's high-yield investments aren't too far behind. And as for those high-yield investments, the high-yield exposure is now achieved through a new pooled fund run by the manager, Connor Clark & Lunn. And we'll just go through a few details of that fund. It has a target credit rating of double B. The manager doesn't buy anything rated below single B. It invests in both Canadian, U.S., and international bonds. And the current mix is about two-thirds foreign and one-third Canada. And all of that foreign currency exposure is hedged. It also has a current focus on financial, consumer, and energy issues. And it makes up about 8% of the fund's total assets. Now, CC&L continues to favor corporate bonds, and whereas a lot of money has been flowing into utility-rated bonds, they're finding better value in insurance and U.S. banks, where they feel misplaced anxiety around the housing market is creating opportunities. Government bonds make up a smaller proportion of the portfolio, and the emphasis continues to be on provincial rather than federal securities. And CC&L doesn't see much value in Government of Canada bonds, where, as you mentioned, Tom, 10-year yields are hovering around 1.7% and currently sit below the rate of inflation. As for income equities, returns have been strong so far this year and have outpaced the overall market by a pretty wide margin. Real estate investment trusts have fared particularly well, and utility stocks have been strong performers. These include companies like Algonquin Power and Brookfield Infrastructure Partners. Now, looking forward, CC&L anticipates that interest rates will rise, although the timing still remains uncertain. Their focus continues to be on corporate bonds, as we mentioned, and they also have a shorter term to maturity of the portfolio and a focus on stocks that are growing their dividends. Tom, the equity fund?
Well, this fund's been a stable performer in this period of heightened volatility. In the last quarter, it was down 1.6%. And over the last year, it's really held up pretty well. It was actually up 0.3%. And over that last year, the TSX was down 10%. And the world index was just roughly flat. We talk frequently about the portfolio's high-quality bias or focus on well-financed companies with stable cash flows and some predictability of earnings. And these types of companies, which some people would label as boring, have anchored the fund's strong performance over the last couple of years. Consumer goods companies remain a key area of investment. Our manager, CGOV, likes businesses that are tapping into emerging market growth. You know, examples of this would be Asia-Pacific breweries with their Tiger and Heineken brands, funny-named company called Dairy Farm, which operates 7-Eleven and IKEA stores in Asia, and, of course, Unilever, which is a very broadly based consumer products company. I'm for sure you have something from Unilever in your medicine cabinet. You know, an area of weakness in the fund has been energy producers. You know, in the report, we single out Birchcliff and Crescent Point. Birchcliff in particular has been weak. We talked about it in the first quarter when its deal to be sold fell apart and it had to do a bit of a distress financing. It needed to raise some capital, which is it's one of the rare companies anywhere in our portfolios that needed to do that. But it's continued to get hit hard, and more so this quarter just because of weak gas prices, and it's certainly a gas producer. CGOV added two new companies, Experian, which is the world's largest credit bureau, which appears to be a bit of a growth market these days, and Magna International, which is a producer of auto parts, well-known in Canada, but really a global player operating all over the world. And CGOV feels that stock doesn't reflect the current level of auto production out there. It's, you know, it's one of the leading players. And as much as there's a recession going on, there's business to be done, and Magna's certainly doing it. So going forward, CGOV's focus remains on profitable, high-quality companies. I know we're a broken record on that. But certainly if valuations on the cyclical stocks continue to decline, I think you'll see them be opportunistic. They're certainly watching a number of names and looking for maybe a potential entry point to give the fund a little bit more juice when we do have some recovery in the economy. Scott, the global?
Well, leave it to me, Tom, to talk about the hardest hit fund in our lineup, but that's okay. It was down 6.4% in the quarter and is up just under 2% on the year. The political posturing and stalling in Europe and all the negative sentiment in the region has been detrimental to many of the fund's holdings. The manager, Edinburgh Partners Limited out of Scotland, feels strongly that company fundamentals are being overlooked and certain stocks are being heavily discounted because of their head office address. Now, the fund's defensive holdings, which include consumer goods companies, telcos, and healthcare stocks, have held their ground pretty well, but this stability has been offset by weakness in resource and financial stocks, as well as Japanese exporters. And as we've talked about in the past, Japanese securities make up about 20% of the fund. Its U.S. holdings have been among its strongest performers this year and over the past few quarters, but the fund has a modest weighting in American stocks relative to their weight in the world index because Edinburgh Partners has seen more attractive valuations elsewhere. One of these areas is Asia and the emerging markets, which remains a key area of focus, both directly and indirectly. The portfolio's direct investments in the region include China Mobile, Swire Pacific, Dongfeng Motor, and Samsung, among a few others, while indirectly, companies such as Unilever and Heineken generate a significant proportion of their revenues in the emerging markets. And overall, the portfolio's investments have sales by end demand of roughly 35% in the emerging markets. A few changes were made in the quarter. Google, Walmart, and Carnival were purchased, while a few holdings that have failed to deliver any visible turnaround results were sold, and notably Nokia and Sony. The focus of the fund remains on companies that have revenue growth targets that are achievable in a slowing global economy and are trading at below average valuations. And in this sense, the portfolio still has a pronounced value tilt. Tom, small cap?
Well, the small cap market was down over 12% in the quarter. The small cap fund lost a modest 1.1%. And so far this year is up 7%. Our fund manager, Will Witherich of the Witherich & Company, attributes this good showing to, number one, strong fundamentals of the portfolio's investments, and two, having a limited exposure to highly cyclical and over-leveraged businesses. And on that first one, certainly the operating results have been strong, and holdings like Badger Daylighting, Calian Technologies, Canadian Helicopters, Medical Facilities, and Hibbett Sports. Most of the companies in the portfolio have little or no debt, which has really helped enable them to turn out steady profits. As to the cyclical comment, one of the key reasons the fund has fared so well relative to others is its limited exposure to the mining sector, where, many of the junior companies have just had a really tough time coping with lower commodity prices, and there's just been no financing for them to build their projects. As with the equity fund, the portfolio's energy holdings were the hardest hit in the spring, with commodity prices weakening, particularly oil and gas remains at very low levels. Scott, I'm going to carry your torch this time and remind our clients that our manager, Will Witherich's style, means that the fund is one that in really hot, resource, small cap markets is likely to not go up as much as some others, but it tends to provide much better downside protection in unstable environments. And that's certainly been the case as we've seen over the last couple of years. Will likes to own businesses that have, real revenues and profits and are well financed. And he often finds that in sectors beyond the resource sector, things like industrials, technology, and consumer. The structure of the portfolio hasn't changed much this year. In this quarter, no stocks were added or removed. And Will's really pretty happy to focus on the tight collection of 17 businesses that he's put in the fund. Certainly, he'll pursue other opportunities as they present themselves, but you could see him certainly in the coming months just continuing to add to what he already has.
Well, Tom, let's end the individual fund updates there, but do you want to tie it all together maybe with a few comments on the Founders Fund?
Well, Scott, as the Founders Fund does kind of pull it all together. It's a diversified fund with a target asset mix of long-term of 60% stocks and 40% fixed income. And this fund invests in our underlying funds to get its exposure to the different asset categories. I oversee the asset mix, and the asset mix will always be a reflection of my view and also be very consistent with the advice we're giving our clients on any of their portfolios. So that's something to keep in mind. Where we are today, and given what you've heard from the other funds, is I have positioned the fund to be a little light on bonds. In fact, reasonably so. It's about 27% of the fund is invested in bonds through the income fund. And that's really, as Scott pointed out, we're not earning much from bonds. Government of Canada yields at the 10-year mark are 1.7%. And there's certainly some possibility that bond prices will drop if yields do back up. And, regardless of that, I just view yields to be unsustainable at these below inflation levels. And I think bonds are expensive. I think it's their perceived safety is at risk here. So as a result of that, we've taken some of the money out of our bond allocation and put it into stocks. And so we're running a little bit over that long-term target, owning roughly 62-63% of the fund in stocks. And we have an emphasis on foreign. We have more foreign than domestic stocks at this point. Clearly that 3D I talked about at the beginning, the concerns in the economy are very real. We think it will impact corporate profits. But we also think that there's probably no investors in the world that aren't aware of what's going on in Europe, what's going on in Washington, D.C., and the potential slowdown in China. Because as a result of that concern and the fear that's out there, we're seeing very reasonable valuations. And we think many stocks have a very heavy dose of crisis already factored into them. North American stocks, we find, are attractively valued, lots of good things to buy. But European and emerging markets are particularly cheap. And we just want our clients to have exposure to the assets that are undervalued and not have too much of what's overvalued. And so thus we have the full allocation to stocks. Having said all that, with 3D lurking, we do still carry some cash, 10% cash overall. This is there for any to take advantage of any weakness in the market. And we've been updating you on all the changes, really just very minor changes in the second quarter. We did trim a little bit more from bonds by selling some income fund, or not adding as much to, I should say, as the fund grows, and adding to stocks with global equities in particular. Now, Scott, just to wrap up, you know, I know a lot of our listeners have said they want to hear about the company, and we don't have a lot to tell you today, but, you know, despite all the uncertainties in the market, we're busy. And as I said in the quarter, my quarterly letter, it's a fun busy. You know, we've passed the five-year mark. We're being noticed now. And I think we've been able to show people that have followed us for a long time that there's evidence that our approach is working. So in our second quarter alone, we grew our client base about 10%. And despite the markets being down in the quarter, our assets were just slightly less than that growth rate and are now up to over $180 million. But we're also trying to improve things and working hard for you on other matters, the most visible of which would be the revamped performance section on the website. Scott here did all the grunt work on that, and we have a little more to do. We're going to add some graphics to it, but we'd love to have you go and take a look at it and let us know what you think. And I just want to close by saying that we never forget or never stop appreciating the confidence you show in us, in letting us manage some of your money, and also for spreading the word. Certainly our growth and being noticed that I referred to early, is a lot of it is coming from client referrals, and we really appreciate it. So on behalf of Scott and I want to thank you for listening today, and we look forward to coming back to you next quarter.